seniors, but he admits its startup was plagued with problems. Visiting with seniors in upstate New York, Bush said any time Washington passes a new law, the opening months can be, in his words, quote, interesting. When the program debuted in January, thousands of needy seniors had problems because pharmacies didn't have the right records, and sign-up for the program has been slow, with many complaining about a bewildering array of private coverage options. George Bush says he knew there'd be confusion to start with, but he says problems are being fixed and the choice of plans is crucial. Democrats, though, call the program a giveaway to drug companies, and they say the least Bush can do now is extend the May 15th sign-up deadline. The heads of the nation's largest oil companies say consolidation is not to blame for rising gas prices. They told a Senate committee today tightness in energy supplies is the problem. The executives say the large companies resulting from mergers are needed to compete in oil exploration and the global oil markets. But lawmakers are not buying that argument. They say merger mania has reduced competition, resulting in higher gas and oil prices in the U.S. The late Serbian leader Slobodan Milosevic reportedly had access to smuggled prescription drugs and alcohol, but the UN War Crimes Tribunal did nothing to cut off the supply. Milosevic died Saturday. Two officials say a prison warden warned his health was at risk when he notified two top tribunal officers, but they say no one moved to tighten supervision of Milosevic. The officials say two doctors believed he intentionally took drugs to undermine his prescribed heart medications. His son today claimed Milosevic was murdered. This is Air America Radio News.
back. I'm Laura Flanders. And no, that's not the voice of Mike Malloy. It's the voice of Laura Flanders. I'm sitting in for Mike. Mike, wherever you are, I hope you're having a fantastic evening off. It is fun to be here again with you all on Air America Radio. We are streaming and blogging at airamericaradio.com. And you can give me a call on 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. I'm Laura. I'm usually heard weekends on this network on Radio Nation with Laura Flanders, heard 7 to 10 p.m. weekends, Eastern Time. All right, so on today's program, Russell Feingold, federal judge Leonie Brinkema, former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, what have they all got in common? They all think this administration is a threat to our Constitution, the integrity of our laws, and our nation. So just why is it that the Democratic leadership still thinks that what Russ Feingold tried to do in the Senate yesterday is out of bounds? In the last few days, what's happened? You've got Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin asking the Senate to stand up for the Constitution by censoring the president. Censoring the president for breaking the law with his illegal, no-order wiretaps of anyone he feels like. And so-called Democratic leaders, what did they do? Suddenly, finally someone's actually leading, and most of them run for cover. Harry Reid declined to endorse the call, said he hadn't even read it. Well, we read it 12 hours early. It was posted on the web. The Washington Post today talked to so-called Democratic strategists. Don't you love those guys? Those are the guys that, whose strategy has led this party from defeat to defeat to defeat. But still, they're the people the Washington Post likes to talk to. And then this is what you read, if you read that paper this morning. Several Democratic strategists said surveillance issues are not Bush's most vulnerable spot, and they fear the party may appear extremist. Heaven forbid. It's more, that was me, not them. It's more likely that a big censure fight would have the effect of rallying folks to his side, said one DS, Democratic strategist, and former Clinton aide. I wonder who that might be. While some in the Democratic base want retribution for what happened to Clinton, the advisor said, I think there is a larger reluctance to try to remove people from office. Well, Feingold hadn't even mentioned removing anyone from office. The White House, meanwhile, dismissed the whole thing as presidential politics. Well, if so, then so good, I say. If Feingold thinks this is a good way to start a presidential run, then good on him. He's a guy who's opposed the Patriot Act from the start. He has stood up for civil liberties. If this is his kind of presidential politics, I'm for it. I've been waiting for it. If he's making a move with a campaign in his mind, then that just might make it a campaign worth getting excited about. If this is what he thinks he is a launching pad for a career for him, a presidential campaign for him, he's also come out against the war, he wants the troops home, I'd say good on him. It's not a criticism in my book that this might be playing presidential politics. Well, phew. I mean, it's not as if he is way out there in some radical fringe when it comes to concerns that the Bush-Cheney crime family, as Mike would call them, are waging an all-out assault on our democracy. I told you, we had a sequence of things in the last few days. You've got Feingold most recently. But as he was speaking in Washington, you had the judge in the Zacharias Moussaoui trial calling the whole thing to a halt because it turned out the government lawyers had been breaking the law by coaching witnesses. Feingold said the president authorized an illegal program to spy on American citizens on American soil and then misled Congress and the public about it and should be censured. From the bench, Judge Brinkema said this, in all the years I've been on the bench, I've never seen such an egregious violation of the court's rules on witnesses. This is the second significant error by the government affecting the constitutional rights of this defendant. More importantly, it affects the integrity of the criminal justice system of the United States. The government case is now completely in a mess because the judge has said she's going to bar the witnesses in question from the court, and the case begins on Monday. Meanwhile, I mean, you've got this judge, federal judge, you know what it takes to be a federal judge these days. A few days ago, you had Reagan appointee to the Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor, warning that the U.S. is in danger of edging towards dictatorship. There was a report on National Public Radio. O'Connor, she was speaking at Georgetown University, said, "It takes a lot of degeneration before a country falls into dictatorship, but we should avoid these ends by avoiding these beginnings. Statutes and constitutions do not protect judicial independence," said Sandra Day O'Connor. "They don't. People do." So just what is it about Russell Feingold's utterly procedural, utterly reasonable attempt to censure a scofflaw president that Harry Reid and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Joe Lieberman think is so utterly out of bounds and scary? This administration is worrying so many people. How come the only friends they've got in the White House these days are in the Democratic leadership? From New Orleans to Biloxi to Baghdad, a majority of Americans have had it up to here with this administration, and they are ready for a change. Luckily, there are some Democrats out there who are offering it. And I should say that in the House, the count on John Conyers' resolution to impeach the president now has 30, or even may just have topped 30, signers. To the rest of you out there, I just came from Montana, maybe I'm fired up with mountain air. To the rest of you, I say, if you are unwilling to pick a fight you fear you might lose, and you don't ever believe you will win any fight, then sit on your hands, go for it, be my guest. But don't do it on my taxpayer dollar, okay? Step aside and let Russ Feingold or John Conyers lead. Maybe you'll get it in your head that you'll get somewhere in this democracy if you follow some who show some spine. On today's program here, sitting in for Mike Malloy, we're going to hear what happened in Florida on day one of Sunshine Week, which was supposed to be a week of open government. You had Capitol cops tossing out reporters from a meeting between the Secretary of State, Jeb Bush's newest political appointee, Sue Cobb, and Leon County Election Supervisor Ion Sancho, who has riled everybody in the administration down there because he doesn't believe Diebold election machines are safe. He thinks those voting machines are unsafe and can be corrupted because he's tried them and he's seen that it's true. He was having a meeting with the Secretary of State. It was supposed to be an open meeting. Suddenly all the press were forced to leave. We'll get a quick report from Ion Sancho at the bottom of the hour. And then a little bit later, we'll get a report from Biloxi, where a march kicked off today that will end up in New Orleans on the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. Who's marching? Veterans and their families from Vietnam, Iraq. Why? Because those who have answered this president's call see just how grievously he is failing to serve the people. They're calling for immediate return of U.S. troops from Iraq, for U.S. tax dollars to be spent on reconstruction, and they're calling for that reconstruction to be done under the direction of the residents of the Gulf Coast. And finally, are U.S. telecom companies deploying their data mining powers inside the U.S. in violation of U.S. law as part of that illegal presidential spying program? 2 months after the New York Times revealed the Bush administration had ordered those illegal wiretaps? Well, we know that AT&T, Sprint, and MCI are cooperating with the government. But are there more? Probably, says our guest, Nation magazine writer Tim Shark. We'll have all of that coming up here on The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Our number is 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. Where do you stand on censuring the president, dare I ask? What did you make of the Democratic leadership's response? And what if it is a presidential ploy? What a word. What if it is a presidential move by Russ Feingold? Do you have a problem with that? 866-303-2270. I don't. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
Well, Club, we read a real classic, The Mac and Cheese Box. Let's discuss.
Oh, I loved it. The boiling of the water, the adding of the salt.
What about the French directions?
Yeah, bouillie de tasses. So romantic.
Yeah.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What about next month? How about the French fried onion can? I've been dying to read it. Oh.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
And now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Except it isn't. I'm Laura Flanders, and maybe conservatives love to hate me too. I don't know. I'm not sure love is big on their agenda. 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. I just flew back from Montana, where I had a great sojourn out there in the land of the so-called Montana miracle. What baloney that is, really. A lot of people working a really, really long time in a state with a really, really strong progressive history. A lot of really, really good candidates. And great organizing on the ground. And then they say, oh, it's a miracle when a Democratic governor gets elected for the first time in 16 years and Democrats get control over both state houses. No miracle. Good strategy. Good organizing. And some candidates from the bottom of the ticket up who actually dared take some stands. And then they tell us it's a miracle. We're talking about, well, I've been talking about Russell Feingold. There's another piece in the news, a couple of things in the news I want to bring your attention to as well. A new oil spill in Alaska. They've been talking about it a little since last Friday when it came out, and the companies involved said, oh, it's all, you know, under control, everything's fine. Well, today's press says not so good. The cold weather up there is making cleanup really, really hard. And my question is, how come this burst oil pipeline that is being identified as the Arctic region's worst oil spill and has obvious implications for Bush's plan to drill in the Arctic, is getting covered more in the British press than it is here? Long story in the British Independent, really teeny tiny story on the U.S. newswires. 250,000 gallons of crude oil over an area used by caribou herds. What's a caribou herb? That's what they smoke when they're up there in that deep winter. Doesn't this seem like a big story to you? They're saying it's bigger than Exxon Valdez, and it's happening in a time of year that's harder to clean up the mess, and they're saying the ecosystem will never be the same, but they're saying it in the British press. How come? Just wondering. And then this from the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Don't like all that hassle of deciding which bills to pay? The country's biggest health insurance companies have a solution for you. According to an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, quote, as health plans impose higher deductibles, copays, and premiums, many patients are becoming slower to pay their portion of hospital and doctor bills. Yeah, we can't afford them. We thought we paid for insurance. A major insurer, United Health Group, Inc., is set to offer an automatic payment program that would give providers, which is to say health insurers, a strong measure of assurance that patients will pay. Because if they don't, United Health will get the money with interest out of paychecks. What do you think about that? They don't like having to all the costs of the collection and bad debt, so they want to take the money direct out of our paychecks? Since when did the health insurers get to jump ahead of the line, ahead of the mortgage and the rent and the food bill and the cost of heating oil? Bush-Cheney capitalism is sounding more and more like corporate fascism every day. And how are they going to sell this plan to you? On the basis that it's convenient. Like, give a little DNA sample or submit to a little easy-peasy retina scan. Yeah, your personal data will forever be in the hands of Big Brother, but no matter, you'll have an easier time at airport security lines until they decide it's more convenient to wiretap and interrogate you anyway. And finally, on airports, I've been in a lot of them in the last few weeks, and if we are going to be a nation that's concerned about privacy and makes us think about privacy, what is the story with people in airports? I have heard about 100 intimate details of the lives of men and women I've never laid eyes on before, just because they're sitting next to me in a departure lounge and shouting into their cell phones. If you want to be taken seriously as you fight against snooping into your privacy, how about lowering your voice on the cell phone, people? All right, let's take a very quick call. All right, Chris is on the line in Montana, and as I've just been there, Chris gets to be the first caller on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. I hope you enjoyed your time in Montana.
I had a great time. They had to drag me out of there kicking and screaming.
Oh, great, great, good. The reason I called is you were talking about Feingold and his action on censure, and I sent him an email thanking him. I'm totally pleased that someone has done something.
Right? I mean, that's how we all feel, isn't it? We've all been waiting for someone to do something, and there's John Conyers, and there's Russell Feingold, and thank heavens for them.
Yeah, and in the process of sending emails to all the rest of the Democratic senators telling them to get behind him.
Well, do it, and you know, Move On is making it easy for people that want to do that right now. If you go to the moveon.org website, they've got all sorts of ways for you to communicate with your senator to that effect.
I signed the petition, and I'm glad something's happening.
Me
so,
too.
Anyway, just wanted to let you know that.
All right, good. So support from Montana. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Chris. Have a great night. All right, I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. We'll hear about a Veterans March from Biloxi to New Orleans. We'll also hear about what happened in Florida yesterday when a supposed sunshine week of open government turned into the opposite of that, and you had Capitol cops chucking reporters out of meetings that were supposed to be public, having to do with voting machines. We'll have the Board of Election Supervisor at Leon County, Florida, with us on the program in just a bit. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
A good news story from AliveGoodNews.com.
I'm passionate about two things, motorcycles and my grandchildren. But for the past 3 years, I've suffered from arthritis. The pain caused me to lose strength in my arms, and I couldn't pick up my grandchildren. My doctor suggested I try Aleve, and I definitely noticed a difference. With the pain gone, I've got the energy to pick up my grandchildren and have fun. It's fantastic.
Aleve invites you to share your good news at AliveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
My name's Rachel, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
I'll start drinking in middle school, and I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by SearchDog USA.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event. And David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. We are streaming and blogging at airamericaradio.com, airamericaradio.com. You can write to me, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at airamericaradio.com, and you can give us a call on 866-303-2270. That's 303-2270. Quickly, let's hear from Angel in Charleston, or is that Angel? Angel, welcome to the program.
Charleston, South Carolina.
All right.
Yes, now I just want to comment. I think one problem these politicians have is you look at the case of Max Cleland. You know, he voted against the war in Iraq, and he did not get reelected. And it was really tragedy because the man's a real patriot. You know, he lost three limbs in Vietnam, and always a lovely man if you've ever met him. You know, and I think sometimes it takes someone like Cindy Sheehan, in other words, the people, to get ahead of the politicians. And, you know, we need to really badger our politicians, and maybe some, at least some of the Democrats in safe districts could at least come out in support of Feingold's measure, because he's absolutely right.
He's absolutely right. And, I mean, everyone's saying, oh, it's just politics, it's not practical, there's no way you could actually censure, let alone impeach. But, you know, there is a point in politics for principled stands and for a maverick calling to account those who have been ignoring the emperor with no clothes. And that's exactly what Feingold is doing. And if he is positioning himself for a run for the White House in 08, then so be it, good on him. And you're right about Cleland and about the need for people to get out ahead. I mean, Cleland, frankly, they couldn't play that same trick on him again, I don't think. I think that he has been shown to be so right and so upstanding against such a gutter campaign from the GOP that if he were to run again, those same tactics wouldn't work. And, you know, you're completely right about people needing to get out of front, but we are in front. I mean, they keep quoting statistics, the polls saying Americans aren't worried about spying on terrorists. Well, on terrorists is the key part of that sentence. A vast majority of Americans believe, and if you look at every poll, there's poll after poll from ABC, CNN, Fox, they all show a majority of Americans believing these wiretap regimes should still be under the order of a judge. There should be reason to wiretap. And the system perhaps could be changed, but the system of the FISA courts is already giving the government what it needs. We'll hear in our last hour, I think, what's at the bottom of some of this, which is to do with using telecom companies' information to not wiretap individuals, this one and that one, but whole hordes of subscribers to different services. But you're absolutely right, Angela. I'm glad you're out there. Thanks for calling.
Yes.
Appreciate it. We'll all get out there in front. We are out there in front. What do they want us to do? Show up with the pitchforks at the White House? I mean, we never get asked our thoughts in the media. We poll against this war, against this president, against this illegal wiretapping whenever we're given half a chance, the majority of Americans. And then they say, well, Americans aren't. It's just not true. It's just not true. And it maybe goes back to, you know, are our votes even being counted accurately? Ion Sancho is on the line from his home near Tallahassee. He's election supervisor in Leon County, Florida. He, with the help of election activists, tested his county's Diebold computer voting machines and produced fraudulent results. He showed others and saw for himself how the machines with no paper trail could be hacked to steal elections. And ever since, he's become persona non grata in Florida with the elections folks. Most recently, well, wait till you hear, on the first day of Sunshine Week celebrating open government in Florida, the new Secretary of State down there, Sue Cobb, no longer Catherine Harris, she's up to other tricks, Sue Cobb tossed out reporters when she was having a meeting with Sancho. Ion, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Laura.
Tell us a little bit more about what happened and why it was important.
Well, it was the most, it was the strangest meeting I've ever been to. We had many public officials, county commissioners, myself, I'm an elected public official, the Secretary of State, and this is Sunshine Week in the state of Florida, and it began with a bang, or actually with a slam, because as the Tallahassee Democrat political reporter Bill Cotterell, the AP reporter Bill Kalstead, and other press were attempting to find out what was going on in this meeting between public officials. The Secretary of State asked for the Capitol Police to come in and escort all the news media away.
So what happened to this whole open idea?
Well, I guess openness is in the eye of the beholder. And in Florida, I'll tell you, the rules are different.
So this story got written up by some of the people who were ejected, and they kind of down-pedaled that part of the story. There was a lot of talk about progress on election rules. Was any progress made? I mean, the line of the officials was, business gets done better when there aren't too many cameras around.
Well, I've never found the need for a private meeting in the 18 years that I've been an elected official. I've never held a private meeting. And my feeling is that secrecy only is the ally of the corrupt or the inept. There's no need for secrecy in public meetings or the public's business. With the direct issue that I had been seeking a meeting with Secretary Cobb over the issue of what can the secretary do to ensure that Leon County could purchase voting machines, because quite frankly, we've been blacklisted since we did the security test in 2005, which revealed that the Diebold optical scan device contained a code, which we believe was illegal, but has been undetected by state and federal certification officials. And this code was a flaw that would allow the outcome of elections to be altered in such a way that it would be undetectable by the election administrator, me. And the reason I undertook such a test was because of the fact that Diebold was sued by the County of Alameda and the State of California in 2003, and Diebold agreed to pay them $2.6 million to hush up the matter. Diebold never notified me, who in fact is under contract to them, that in fact that they were convicted of making false claims to election officials. And it was clear to me that I needed to conduct independent tests of the device to determine whether or not they were secure.
Well, you didn't exactly win the love of your Secretary of State in doing that.
Oh, no. The Secretary of State has threatened us with legal action, has threatened us with all sorts of nefarious actions.
So what do you think she didn't want the press to see in that meeting between yourself and her office?
Well, I don't know, because essentially it was a discussion to remove some of the fear-mongering that quite frankly had been generated. Individuals on the Leon County Commission had taken the secretary's letter that she sent to me on February 2nd and March 3rd as evidence that federal marshals were on their way to Tallahassee to take over our elections process. And we clearly put that canard to rest. The secretary admitted she knew of no action by the federal government to take over the elections in Leon County. But what we do have here is in the state of Florida, we have the three major vendors in the United States of America who between them comprise almost 90% of all of America's votes. All of them have refused to sell me voting equipment so that we can comply with the disability requirement in HAVA.
Because they think you'll test it.
Well, and the state, who has granted a legal right to these entities to create a legal monopoly, will not at the same time require the entities to sell to the counties. And it seems to me that the certification is not a right, it's a privilege. And just as a utility company, when they're granted a monopoly to sell power, they must sell that power to every customer.
Right.
Except here in the state of Florida, the Secretary of State says that's a private matter between you and the voting machine company.
It sounds like they're just trying to wait you out, that eventually you've got to have a voting machine plan there or a voting plan there. Heaven knows, maybe you should just go back to paper and pencil and forget all about the machines.
Well, quite frankly, that would be the most comforting thing if we could do that. But Florida has outlawed going back to paper and pencil. Florida's made it illegal to even examine the only method which the state of California, invalidating the Leon County security findings, indicate is the only way to detect this flaw. Again, successful attacks, and this is from the California study, which validated our test, Successful attacks can only be detected by examining the paper ballots. Well, guess what, Laura? In the state of Florida last year, under direction of the Governor Jeb Bush and the Secretary of State, it is illegal to examine the paper ballots if they have been machine read. Again, the only method to determine...
The only way to check the machine, is to read the ballot that comes out of the machine, but it's illegal to read a ballot if it's come out of a machine.
That is correct.
Okay. Well, you've got a lot more meetings, I would say, to have. Maybe you should just meet directly with the voters, and to heck with this, all these intermediaries.
Well,
I think you've got most of the people there in Florida on your side. And keeping the media out of the picture is not going to solve the Secretary of State's problem. You have revealed a problem with the election process of Florida, and it's not going to go away by keeping the press out the door.
No, it's not. And quite frankly, we're trying to get the Secretary of State's office to focus on this real dilemma.
Well, she hasn't got very much time either. All right, thank you, Ion. I appreciate it. Ion Sancho, election supervisor in Leon County, really the enemy number one now of the elections officials there in Florida. He needs your support, too. We'll be back, and we'll get a little heads up about a march from Biloxi to New Orleans being undertaken by veterans who want troops home and money to the Gulf states for reconstruction under the directorship of the residents. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy, and we'll take more of your calls, a whole lot more coming up on the Mike Malloy Show here on Air America Radio.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who is working on future safety innovations like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning. Totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Okay, we are blogging and streaming at airamericaradio.com. But, you know, the easiest way to find the blog is by going to radionation.com. And it's right there on the top right-hand side. You can find it, radionation.com. It's a little tricky to find otherwise on the Air America site. But they're there. They're blogging. And we're taking your calls on 866-303-2270. A quick call from, let's hear, a quick call from Rich in Denver. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Hey, Laura, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
You know, I listened to your last segment. You're talking about going on the White House with pitchforks. You're laughing, but, you know, the sad thing is this is going on 6 years, and you're like, let alone impeachment. You know, we got a Senator Allard here who called Feingold basically his communication a terrorist, you know, with his policy. And, you know, I just want Howdy Doody out. I want him impeached. You know, Howdy Doody 2 wouldn't be much better. But you know.
So do you have a pitchfork?
It's absolutely sad and it's sickening, and it's just, you know, this country, it gets what it deserves for letting this guy stay in that house for one day longer. And there's going to be 3,000 Americans dead by the end of summer in Iraq, and that country will go the way of April 29th, 1975, when Saigon fell. It will fall down. America will pull out, and it'll be the same thing happening all over again. And just like these vets who are marching, who want their brethren home right now, who are dying senselessly over there in the United States of Iraq for no reason at all.
Yeah, people have got to get out front. And let me go straight from that comment, Rich. Well said. To Stan, who's calling us from Alabama. They're on the road from Biloxi, heading towards New Orleans. Stan, welcome to the program. Stan Goff. Stan Goff is one of the organizers of this rally of veterans marching, actually from Mobile, to New Orleans. He's also the author of Hideous Dream, a soldier's memoir of the U.S. invasion of Haiti. Stan, welcome to the program. You just heard it. People want people to get out in front, and that sounds like exactly what you and your colleagues are doing.
That is exactly what we're doing. And we've got, I don't know, I think somewhere around 200 people camping out here on the property of one of the hurricane victims in Bayou La Batre right now. We marched through Mobile today. We'll start marching again tomorrow in Pascagoula, home of Trent Lott, the most Klan-friendly member of the United States Senate, and also one of the largest military installations on the Gulf Coast. We think it's really important that we draw the connections between the war at home and the war abroad. And they have declared war on the people down here on the Gulf Coast, and in fact, you know, this notion that FEMA is incompetent and that's why they can't get trailers out to people and so forth is really not true. FEMA's dragging its feet because this administration's cronies are sitting around, especially the land speculators and developers are sitting around like turkey vultures, hoping that people stay gone so
yeah.
They can snap up their land at fire sale prices. The same way that they're over there trying to snap up, you know, access to somebody else's oil.
Are people happy to see you, Stan? Are they joining along the march?
They've not only joined us along the march, but they're hosting us right now. We had a big outdoor supper. It's actually about 40 degrees out here right now, but we had a very nice get together with some of the local survivors tonight down here in Bayou La Batre. We had supper together outdoors. They took some of our Iraq veterans. We have a fair number. Almost 30 members of Iraq Veterans Against the War with us down here tonight. They took them down to tour some of the devastated areas here.
So these are people with nothing looking after you, so happy they are to see you.
I think they'd be offended that this is the Deep South, and we're actually in the Black Belt, and when you're the guest down here, people want to display their hospitality. And they've been very hospitable.
Mm.
And they're actually joining us on the march tomorrow, and a good number of survivors joined us on the march today. And we think this thing is going to grow. as it goes down the road.
When you hear the White House press person, I don't expect you did hear him, but I'll tell you what he said, when Russell Feingold got up yesterday and proposed to censure the president for breaking the law on the illegal wiretapping of Americans, you had the press secretary there, Scott McClellan, saying the usual thing of, it's very dangerous to criticize a president in a time of war. When the people down there hear them say this stuff, you can't criticize a president when he's doing his best to keep people safe against the terrorists. What do they think?
Well, this administration is not a particularly popular group of people down here right now, especially among the communities that we've been traveling through so far, African-American communities in particular. Of course, this administration has never been particularly popular, but people are very clear down here about what this administration is. We've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people down here who need jobs just to get themselves back on their feet. You know, you can't put the businesses back up down here until you have some people who have some money in their pocket and that kind of thing. And all the jobs that are here are the ones that are being given to Bush cronies, or the cronies of Haley Barbour. Ash Britt's one of the biggest contractors down here. They wanted to hand out no-bid contracts to Halliburton and Bechtel, all the, you know, the usual suspects that got the crony contracts in Iraq. And again, like I say, FEMA's not only incompetent, they're dragging their feet intentionally in order to make a land grab for people down here. They want to take a great African-American city like New Orleans and turn it into an African-American theme park that real African-Americans can no longer afford to live in. It's criminal what's going on down here, and that's on a par with the criminality of this illegal and immoral war in Iraq. And so we're saying bring them home, bring the troops home, and bring the survivors home, and make them the architects of their own futures, and not, you know, a bunch of elites sitting back in smoke-filled rooms and making decisions about the future of the people down here.
You are absolutely right. We've got to have military people at the middle, at the center of our anti-war movement, our peace and justice movement, and we have to have the people of the Gulf Coast at the center of directing the reconstruction there post-Katrina. Stan, thank you so much. We're going to rally some support for you as this hour goes on, as this program goes on, and when we come back, we'll be joined by one of the Iraq War veterans you talked about. Stan Goff, the author of Hideous Dream. Stay tuned. More of The Mike Malloy Show with me, Laura Flanders, coming up.
Hello, my name's Smokey, and I'm a hardcore biker. I'm here to tell you that Geico... Hold on a sec. Is this the right music, bro? Really? Anyway, Geico covers most kinds of bikes, so you can get money-saving discounts whether you're a casual weekend rider or a hardcore biker like me. See, man, I'm not sure. This music don't make a lick of sense.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda Can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the phenylketonuric, though. It sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Oh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
America Radio News. I'm Bill Crowley. More CO2, less frozen H2O. Carbon dioxide and other so-called greenhouse gases reach record high levels in the atmosphere in 2004. That's in a report by the World Meteorological Organization, aimed at providing an annual measuring system for emissions widely blamed for global warming. The publication of the first annual Greenhouse Gas Bulletin gives the scientific community worldwide data on the amount of heat-trapping gases created in the burning of fossil fuels. A growing number of scientific studies support the theory. Increased levels of carbon dioxide, methane, and other gases are accumulating in the atmosphere, trapping heat and raising the Earth's average temperature. Scientists have been measuring greenhouse gases for 30 years. As a result, they say there is 35% more carbon dioxide than there was back in 1750. Meanwhile, sea ice in the Arctic has failed to reform for the second consecutive winter. That's raising fears global warming may have tipped the polar regions into irreversible climate change far sooner than predicted. Satellite measurements of the area of the Arctic covered by sea ice show for every month this winter, the ice failed to return even to its long-term average rate of decline. It's the second consecutive winter the sea ice has not managed to reform enough to compensate for the unprecedented melting seen during the summer, scientists now convince. That's showing signs of both a winter and a summer decline that may indicate a major acceleration in the long-term rate of ice disappearance. Shortly after U.S. forces invaded Baghdad, British Prime Minister Tony Blair's point man in Iraq warned him in two confidential cables that the Americans were mishandling the occupation and losing public support. That's in that new book, Cobra 2, the inside story of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. The British diplomat said the exhausted U.S. troops occupying the capital lacked an overall strategy for dealing with former members of Saddam's Ba'ath Party. He said they couldn't cope with starting reconstruction projects, handling the media, or maintaining security. Electricity output in Iraq dipped to its lowest point in 3 years. Now U.S. engineers winding down rebuilding the crippled power grid 3 years after the start of the war. But the Iraqis, in fact, may have to turn to neighboring Iran, maybe as soon as this summer, but certainly in years to come, to help to bail them out of their growing energy crisis. The overstressed electrical network is producing less than half the power needed to meet Iraq's demand. This is Air America Radio News.
I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. It's very kind of Capital Journal-esque, that music, isn't it? Mike Malloy's music, it doesn't really go with what I associate with Mike. I guess I've never paid attention to the music before, but he likes the Pink Floyd. All right, well, there you go. It takes all types. Listen, people, if you want to mark the anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, there's an event if you're in the New York area. There are events all over the country, for sure, but there's one that I'm part of Monday here in New York at the Hammerstein Ballroom. There'll be performances by Rufus Wainwright, Peaches, Steve Earle, our very own, Michael Stipe of R.E.M., Bright Eyes, Fisher Spooner. It's going to be a great event with speeches from Cindy Sheehan, myself, Margaret Cho, Susan Sarandon, Chuck D. A lot of people going to be showing up, partly to be together on that day and partly to send a very strong message, bring them home now. The proceeds are going to be donated to Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War. This whole event's happening with help from Air America. And people, if you're in the New York area, the tickets are affordable. Come on out. There is a VIP greeting with Cindy Sheehan and Peaches. And there'll be one heck of a concert, and it's all in a good cause. So if you're in New York, come down to the Hammerstein Ballroom. It's on 34th and 8th on Monday. It starts, I don't know, usual time, 7 p.m., show at 8. All right? Be there, be square. I'd be happy to see you. And if you were in Madison tonight and you heard Mike, call in and give him a grade. How about that? 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. We're talking about the war in Iraq, entering in one in anniversary week again, another year gone by. Thousands more dead. The latest this evening, police discovered more than 80 bodies in and around Baghdad. 80! Some of them, many of them, according to the wire reports, bearing the marks of torture and execution. Meanwhile, yesterday you had Bush vowing to turn over most of Iraq to Iraqi troops by the end of the year. Meanwhile, a week ago, we had the Pentagon admitting that the one Iraqi battalion that they had been promoting as the evidence of how the U.S. training program had gone so well, it was now able to operate alone, is now no longer able to operate alone. So there are no Iraqi battalions capable of fighting without U.S. help. So I don't know who he thinks he's turning these forces over to. I mean, turning Iraq over to. He's created something that it seems to me they are maneuvering to call a civil war. Now, maybe it will be a civil war before we're done with it, such that we can then justify maintaining permanent bases in the country. And that's where I think it's going to happen. I started in journalism covering Northern Ireland. Grew up in England. My father was British. My mother was American. I got interested in what was happening in Northern Ireland, went over there, and what did you have? You had, you know, the British who had set people at each other's throats in a history of colonialism now saying, well, we have to keep troops on the ground because these two camps are so bellicose. Those Irish, they just like to fight. And that's what they're going to be telling us about Iraq, where there never was a civil war before. This was not a country where Shiite and Sunni were at each other's throats until the U.S. invasion, when they registered for the U.S. occupation force organized elections last year was the first time Iraqis had been required to identify themselves according to their religious sect. And most people don't identify or didn't identify themselves that way before the invasion. If there is a civil war in Iraq, it is of our making. It was entirely predictable. And it will, I fear, become excuse for the maintenance of permanent bases. Meanwhile, on that new public relations campaign that is doing nothing, the president trying to win greater support for his war, the latest poll shows his approval rating is just 36%. 60% say the war's going badly, and I think that's an understatement. In this attempt to shore up support for his war, what's he offering? He's offering another one. He's attempting to tie Iran to the war in Iraq by accusing Tehran, he did on Monday, of helping Shiite fighters build those IMD, those improvised devices that explode and take out U.S. soldiers and Iraqi civilians. Talk about political grandstanding. This is all about politics, nothing about Iranians. Reporting from Iran today, the Washington Post quotes prominent Iranian human rights activists pleading with President Bush to please stop talking about these rattling sabers against Iran, and because it's just making life worse for them. And the human rights activists there saying that Bush's plan to spend tens of millions of dollars to promote democracy inside Iran and all the brouhaha he's making about it is endangering their lives because people in Iran, the police there and the government there, then thinks they're American agents. They're indigenous, local, pro-democracy activists who've been at this forever. And then you have Bush saying, we're supporting anti-government forces inside Iran. We're trying to build a democracy movement. They had a democracy movement until the U.S. invasion of Iraq so stirred up political feeling that the Iraqis elected an extremist, Ahmadinejad, simply because he said he would stand up to U.S. forces. He would stand up to the White House. He became way more popular after the U.S. invasion than he ever would have been before. There was a growing democracy movement in Iran. Now, with Bush talking about how he's wanting to support a democracy movement, you've got the human rights activists there saying, we're getting taken up off the street by Iranian intelligence as U.S. spies. Apparently, the government jailed two of these folks who traveled outside the country this month, to attend workshops on human rights, and two other people who attended those workshops were interrogated for 3 days. So it's not going well. If you want to participate in the event on March 20th at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York, I'll be there. I'll be happy to see you. And if you want to join those soldiers marching from Mobile and Biloxi to New Orleans, I'm sure they could do with your support, if only just to bring them down a bit of food or a bit of sleeping bag, 40 degrees, that's cold. In a bit, we'll talk with Kelly Doherty, who is an Iraq war veteran and co-founder of the group Iraq Veterans Against the War. She was in Iraq for many years, many months, 10 months, and it was just a few years ago, and she's come back, and from the jump, as soon as she got back, she started organizing against this war, and she's taking part in this walk into New Orleans march. She'll be with us in a bit. But let's take some calls. Bruce is on the line in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, Laura. Hi. I just wanted to say that here in Portland, Oregon, we're going to be marking the sad third anniversary of this war with a march Sunday, March 19th. And I just wanted to tell everybody here in Portland and the surrounding area that we're going to meet at 1:30 at Oak in Waterfront Park for a permitted march, and it's going to be family friendly. We got 150 different organizations sponsoring us, and I have a feeling it's going to be our biggest march yet, and maybe it'll do something toward maybe stopping this madness and the run toward a war in Iran and bringing these troops home from Iraq.
Have you got support of your local politicians there?
Pardon me?
Do you have support of your representatives there?
Yes, we do. We have support from Pete Sorensen and quite a few others. So, you know, we'll see who can stand up and be counted.
Yeah, I mean, I would put up a big sign saying you vote for troops out or you don't get our vote.
That's taken under advisement. I think it's an excellent idea.
I mean, we've got to start playing hardball. We really do. You have the religious right, the right. Our geniuses at hardball. They say, you know, whatever else you may stand for, if you don't stand for this thing, we're not voting for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they draw a line in the sand. And we've been reluctant to do that because, heck, it's hard. It's hard. We've got so many needs to be met, and we've got so many bad options. We do get ourselves backed into a corner. But I think it's time. I think it's time on behalf of these soldiers. When I saw the Nation magazine cover a few weeks back, or maybe it's months now, saying you will not get our vote unless you take a stand against this war, that resonated with me. That seemed right. When I see Molly Ivins 2 weeks in a row, basically, or at least twice in the last few weeks saying the same thing, I've had it with these spineless Dems, I will not support a candidate who doesn't support a pullout of troops, I'm with her. I think we as the voters have to start demanding some respect.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks
Absolutely.
For the call.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Herb's on the line in Mississippi. Oops. Herb, did I lose you? Darn. I really wanted to go to Herb. All right. Let's take another call. Let's try Jeff in Georgia. Hey, Jeff. Welcome to the program. And Herb in Mississippi, call on back. Maybe I pushed the wrong button. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Laura. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I wanted to call and talk about Senator Feingold and the censure problem that we seem to be having in Washington, D.C. right now.
We don't have a censure problem. We have a scofflaw problem. We have a president who doesn't obey the law that he swore with his hand on a Bible, I think it was a Bible, to uphold.
I heard a Masonic Bible, after all. But it's one of those things that the party seems to have just lost its way completely. There seems to be no patriots in Washington, D.C. anymore. And for people, I live in a red state, unfortunately. And
there's no such thing. I really believe there is no such thing.
Well, there's purple states.
There are purple states. I've been on this tour. America is purple. We've been going to blue spots and red states. There is no such thing as a red state or a blue state.
Yeah, I was listening to Fox Radio to get my daily dose of hatred dished out today, and was listening to the constant bashing, and it seems that we always play into this. Exactly what they say about the Democrats is exactly the way our supposed representatives are acting, and it's very, very difficult.
What do you mean, having no spine, backing away from people that show leadership?
It seems that they want to just cower in the corner, and nobody wants to stand up except for Russ. And he stands up, and the minute he stands up, you see all these guys run into the corner. They sit there, they wet in their pants, and then they scream about, you know, all the injustice when nobody seems to be willing to stand up.
We have to do both, and thank you for the call, Jeff. We have to both, you know, send a strong message to those who don't stand up and send a message to those who do. Let's not forget there are now 30 signatories in the House on John Conyers' impeachment initiative. Those folks need to hear from you as well. I thank you for the call. We'll be back with more, and we'll hear from Kelly Doherty, Iraq war veteran, and Herb, who called back. Yay, Herb. All right, stay tuned. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders, and this is the Mike Malloy Show. Mike's out. I'm sitting in. You can call us on 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0, and you can write to me, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at airamericaradio.com. On the line from the same place Stan was, somewhere between Mobile and New Orleans, is Kelly Daugherty, Iraq War veteran and co-founder of the group Iraq Veterans Against the War. She spent 10 months in Iraq as a member of the Colorado National Guard with the 220th Military Police Company in southern Iraq near Nazaria. She's the daughter of a Vietnam War veteran, and she's taking part in this Walk Into New Orleans march. Kelly, welcome to the program. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about the Iraq Veterans Against the War delegation that's participating in this walk, and who's showing up and why it's important.
Well, we have about 25 members of Iraq Veterans Against the War that are going to be joining us in the march to New Orleans. And for me personally, I think that this march is really important because I spent a year in Iraq, and during the time I was there, I just saw the complete poverty and destruction that the war had caused to the Iraqi people. And then when I got back and 6 months ago watched Hurricane Katrina unfold and watched our own citizens pretty much abandoned to starve and drown while they waited for their government to bring help that really didn't come, I felt it was really important to draw parallels between our military misadventures overseas and the complete diversion of funds here for human needs.
Mm. Now, I remember when we've had you on my weekend show, Radio Nation, a few times, and I think I remember you saying that when you were in Iraq, one of your jobs was providing security for Halliburton contractors. They're all over the Gulf. Have you seen any familiar faces?
Well, you know, we just got here late last night, and so far I think we haven't really hit the real destruction, but what I have heard is that, you know, a lot of the same contractors, Halliburton, Bechtel, Blackwater Security, are getting no-bid contracts to supposedly rebuild the Gulf Coast. And, yeah, when I was in Iraq, one of my main jobs as military police was to provide security for Halliburton contractors to supply military bases, to rebuild military bases, while the average Iraqi continued to live in poverty. And instead of giving the jobs to the Iraqis and helping them rebuild their country, they're bringing in low-paid foreign workers, which is also what I hear is happening a lot along the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, same people, same tactics, and same level of militarization, at least in certain parts of the Gulf Coast, is what I've heard and certainly saw when I was down there. Now, I think you've been in touch with your fellows in the National Guard from Colorado since you got back. Did any of those find themselves involved in Katrina relief?
Well, the unit that I was in, the 220th Military Police Company, did get activated and sent down to Louisiana after the hurricane hit. And one of the main reasons for that, or the main reason, was that the majority of the Louisiana National Guard and other National Guard units in the Gulf that could have helped were in Iraq. A lot of the equipment was in Iraq. And then instead, a couple weeks ago, the IDAW office got a phone call from a Louisiana National Guard member who had gotten activated to help the local police kick hurricane survivors out of their hotel rooms in the middle of the night and put them on buses to homeless shelters.
Mm.
And, you know, being in the National Guard, most people sign up to the National Guard because it's a citizen-soldier kind of environment, at least in Syria, where you can help out your community. And instead of helping out the community, they were treating them much like we were treating the Iraqis.
Mm. Now, going back a couple of decades, or really more than a couple, to the experience of African-American soldiers who served in World War II, there's more than just Muhammad Ali, but he's the most famous, who felt like he served his nation, came back and saw segregation in the United States, and it fired him up, turned him into the revolutionary, really, that he became, resisting the Vietnam War. Do you see a sort of politicizing process like that happening among your fellows, Kelly, very quickly, and then we'll come back to you after the break?
Oh, I definitely think that for a lot of Iraq veterans, you know, they're going over to Iraq to supposedly fight for freedom and democracy, and yet coming home from the war and being abandoned by the government and finding that a lot of the needs that the Iraqis were facing, need for reconstruction and employment, health care, that when the vets are coming home, they're facing the exact same struggles.
Stay right there. We'll be right back. Kelly Daugherty's our guest. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Laura Flanders. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
Now out on DVD. Good Night and Good Luck, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
We'll be right back.
No, I don't want some. I've got a guy called Herb on the line, and he is a vet, and he is a Katrina survivor. Also with us, Kelly Doherty. She's an Iraq war veteran, co-founder of the group Iraq Veterans Against the War. She's right now en route, walking along with Stankoff and a whole lot of other people, 200 I hear, as part of a Walk Into New Orleans march that's going to wind up in New Orleans on the third anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Although even that these days, I wonder, everything we're learning is the invasion actually took place months beforehand with special forces getting in there. So anyway, it's the day we will mark and stiffen our spine, our determination to bring the troops home and send the politicians home who agreed to send them to Iraq. Well, let's hear from Herb. Herb, thank you for calling back.
I finally got in, didn't I?
Third time lucky.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've never talked to you before, and it's really nice. I wanted to tell you, I appreciate you focusing on the fact that these people are making this march as a veteran, disabled Vietnam veteran, and having served in two branches of the military. It means a lot to me to see the veterans stand up and do something like this. I wish I could join them, but I'm not physically able. But when you talk to them, I'll tell them that even though I'm only like 85 miles from where they are, I can't join them, but I sure will be thinking about them.
Oh, well, I'll certainly tell Kelly, and we'll get her back on the line.
My twin sister lives in Goshen, and she works in Ocean Springs, so they'll go right by her. She lives in a tent. Her house was completely destroyed.
I mean, there is no group of people who can see this situation more clearly than the vets. There they are. They're the people who answered the president's call to serve, and then they come back and they say, what's his part of the bargain?
It's supposed to be a
two-way deal. A, you're not supposed to lie people into a war. Secondly, you are at least supposed to maintain your bargain that you'll look out for home while they're away. You've got people who served in Iraq coming back to no homes in New Orleans, and I think that's why you've got vets there out front, because they can see the contrast, the hypocrisy between the saying the one thing, the doing another, and the throwing around of this word security when you've got a whole part of our precious country, some of the most important land we've got, just, still underwater, some of it. And it seems like the idea is to wait people out so they get so desperate they will reconstruct any which way, which will suit the developers just fine, because they don't want people rebuilding those Mississippi coast towns the way they were, with a lot of local culture and, quaint appeal. They want to build enormous casinos.
Well, if you need people that desperate, that's exactly
what they're going to agree to.
Now, Laura, what they're going to do is they're going to go by a place called Point Cadet.
Okay.
This was an area that was heavily populated with Vietnamese. Many of them came from Vietnamese refugees directly, and some of them probably are. And this area was totally wiped out. I mean, there's absolutely nothing there now. And these people's land is being held by, is the big developers are trying to steal their land from them.
So wait a minute. Vietnamese, who were many of them dislodged because they became enemies of the government because they had associations with the U.S. forces when they were in the Vietnam War, or they're just with no longer the land, the land's been napalm, there's no longer an economy they can actually make a living off in Vietnam. They come here and they find themselves losing their homes again.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's happening because it's a big power struggle. Now, I know for a fact this is going on because it's in the Clan Ledger newspaper. It's in some other newspapers here.
Mm.
And it is going on. And the hypocrisy of these Christians in this area, because they are, would you believe they are still backing this joker.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of us here that don't.
All right, let me stay there one second, Herb, but let's bring on Kelly. Kelly, welcome back. Sorry your phone died there. We've got Herb on the line, who is a vet. He's apparently just 85 miles away from where you are. He wishes he could be with you, but he wants you to know that he's thinking of you, and he's clearly watching your march and very glad that you're doing it, and has got some ideas of where you're passing through, Point Cadet being just one of them.
Oh.
Kelly, do you want to, you got any thoughts for people like Herb who are listening in and sending you their support?
Well, I think from what I've heard since I got down here last night, there's a lot of survivors along the Gulf Coast who wish that they could be here with us or definitely agree because they know far better than I do the destruction that they've suffered. And 6 months later, when I've been talking to hurricane survivors today and yesterday, they say that things are still in horrible condition and that they're not getting the help that they need.
Mm. Is there anything they can do to support you if they can't actually come join the march?
Well, I would encourage everybody listening to visit the website, which is vetgulfmarch.org. And on the website, there's a very detailed list of where we'll be going every day, where we'll be stopping, which organizations will be joining us. If anyone wants to give money donations or in-kind donations, food, water, things like that, there's a list of very detailed instructions there. And some of the local organizations that we're working with are SOS, which is Saving Ourselves, the Common Ground Collective, C3 New Orleans, and all of those organizations are doing really important work to help out their communities, and I'm sure all of those organizations could use not only money, which I know a lot of people along the Gulf Coast don't have, but also volunteers, so I think it's more, maybe I'm more putting out a call to the nation.
Yeah.
Hey, Laura,
yeah.
May I interject something here? She's also going to pass by in Gulfport a VA hospital that was closed by Bush in his first term, and this was a hospital for drug rehabilitation. It was for mental patients and all of this, and it was a pretty decent hospital, and it got closed in his first term because he cut the funding. She will see this. It is awful to see.
Mm-hmm.
But I know these people were turned out in the streets. Many of them turned up in jail. Many of them probably died, you know. And she will notice it. She can't miss it because there's signs there. She'll see the guard shack and everything when she goes through.
All right, Herb. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. Kelly, back to you. It sounds like there's a lot to be seen on your route. Are there a lot of cameras there following your path?
Well, today we had a fair amount of media, and I think that will definitely grow as we continue to march and get closer to New Orleans. I also think that more and more people are going to be joining us. I mean, I know a lot of people who are planning to be here haven't gotten here yet, and I know that we've been in the media so far from our first day, and I think that will continue to grow, and I think it's hugely important because I think just like Iraq, the Gulf Coast has been forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of this VA hospital in Gulfport that Herb was mentioning?
I'm not aware of that. One of our Iraq vets is from New Orleans, and I know he knows a lot more about the VA hospitals in this area. And across the country, VA hospitals are closing, and in some of the cases, places where they're needed the most by veterans.
It's just, I mean, it gets me so riled up. I haven't been down to New Orleans since November, but what I saw then was enough to have me come back with my hair on fire. We did our program from the offices of the Common Ground Collective there, broadcast live from there. Was really quite a thing. I just always, whenever I'm talking to someone, feel like sort of screaming from the hilltops, how can we be ignoring this story? And what a picture, what a window the Katrina scene opens on our priorities as a nation and just how misguided they are. But Kelly, I don't want to ignore the Iraq war vets that you work with every day at Iraq Veterans Against the War. Everywhere I've been traveling, I'm hearing about people coming back with grievous injuries, serious PTSD. What are you seeing a little bit, given that one of your organizations is one of those that people are finding on the web? What sort of shape are people coming back in, and where are they channeling their rage if they feel, as I do, that they've been wronged, and we all have been?
Well, I think as far as people who are members of Iraq Veterans Against the War, I think this group can be very healing to have a place to come together as a veteran community and talk about these things, talk about the problems and the issues and the frustration and anger that we're all dealing with and be in a community of friends. And so I would encourage any veteran of the Iraq War or of the military since September 11th, 2001, to visit our website and consider joining, and that's IDAW.org. In Colorado Springs, where I live, there's a military base there, Fort Carson. It's an Army base. And so I have many friends who either are or were stationed at Fort Carson, and they're encountering nothing but roadblocks to care. And I think really what needs to be done is the community needs to step up and offer alternatives. We have a group called Vets for Vets in Colorado Springs, which is also a nationwide group, which is a peer support group for Iraq vets. And I think that helps a lot, because if Iraq vets come back and they're met with all these obstacles and no help, then they can start retaliating in self-destructive and generally destructive ways, drug and alcohol abuse, depression, anger problems. But when they have people to talk to and to relate to, that really helps reintegrate people and get them help.
Mm. Well, they're certainly going to see the people you're with, and you are going to see a lot on this walk that will connect you back to the condition of life for folks back here in the States. I hope that it's a, well, I hope that you come away fired up and not further discouraged. It's really an infuriating scene. But if I know the folks in New Orleans, they will greet you with open arms, and you'll have a good time as well there on the march. If you want information, vetgulfmarch.org is the website. Good folks, if you can lend some support to this Vets for Peace march, do it. Do it now. VetGulfMarch.org. And if you want more information about Iraq Veterans Against the War, just go to IVAW.org. Kelly, our hearts are with you. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing. We wish we could be there. Heck, maybe we'll show up.
Oh, thank you, Laura. And we are hopeful.
Good.
We definitely are.
Me too. Against all the odds. They call me the optaholic. All right, we'll be back. We'll take more of your calls. What are we going to do, people? What are we going to do? 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Stay tuned.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
show.
Fire, like my fire, every time I think about New Orleans, every time I think about the Mississippi Gulf Coast. What a mess. How dare we as a nation hold our head up high in the so-called international community of nations when this is how we prioritize. More for war, more for luxury tax cuts for the super wealthy, and our people. Basic needs being held back. Because of what? Budget cuts? Because of what? Tax cuts? Because of what? We don't care? We don't know? We don't have the technology? But we want to set up 14 military bases around the Middle East? Oh, it just makes me furious. All right, Kevin has been waiting very patiently for a very long time in Philadelphia. Thanks for hanging on there, Kevin. Glad to have you.
Okay, glad to be on the air. You had talked earlier about my mind is
Feingold. Feingold and the censoring motion.
Right. Well, you had Lieberman, you know, the usual gang of four weaklings. You had Lieberman, you had Biden, you had Pelosi, and
we should call them the gang of what are they good for? How about that?
Right. Yeah. What are they good for? But what I want to position the thinking of America is, forget about Democrat. Forget about Republican. Think about the American people. We need leaders.
I'm with you.
Not a Reed, not a Frisk. They're jokes. America, there's jokes. We need, at this point, to focus on 06.
What did you think of what Russell Feingold did?
I think what he did, he showed guts. But here's the point that I really wanted to make is there should be no debate about someone breaking the law.
Right.
It should be an investigation. If I were to break the law, do you think that the judge and the prosecutor and the police would debate whether I broke the law or not? They would look in their law book and they would say, well, look, this is what we claim that he did. Let's do our investigation and see whether he did that or not.
Well, there's a lot of people saying there should be an investigation before the censure. He said that Congress can do any range of things, including an investigation, but we don't need an investigation into whether the White House broke the FISA Act, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. We know they broke it because they've acknowledged that they broke it. It was passed to ensure that Americans were protected from unjustified intrusion. All it required was for the prosecutor, the person that wants the wiretap, to get the approval of this FISA judge. Never said no to an application I can think of. The president broke the law. He went and ordered the wiretaps without the warrants, and then he lied to Congress about it, or at least misled them.
Well, then he should be what they call, that's an impeachable offense.
I agree.
And there should be no censorship. There should be stepping around the issue. Impeachment process should be started immediately.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying because of President Bush, whoever. When Clinton was in office, he lied to Congress. He lied. He should end impeachment process. The gun. And impeachment is not the
And at the height of the impeachment process against Clinton, his popularity rating was exactly twice what this president is today.
Thank you very much.
Just by way of historical reminder.
So your Harry Reid's, your Biden's, your Losey's, your Pelosi's, I really can't wait until 06. Now, they'll probably still be, they'll still have their jobs, but I want them to know this, that the American people is your HR department.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, Kevin, I'm with you. I think there are Republicans who are as horrified by this as you and I are, for sure. And I've been meeting them around the country, horrified about the conduct of the war, horrified about the conduct of this government post-Katrina. Now we've got tornado disasters, no more preparedness around that than ever, and yet we always have a tornado season. And there are Republicans who are the old school type of Republican who say, you know, privacy, spying, we're against it. Traditional conservative values do not include dissing the courts, ignoring the judge, disobeying the law when it comes to wiretapping Americans. You know, in 2004 in Montana, interestingly, I was just there, Republicans on the Flathead area, north of Missoula, conservative part of the state, actually broke with their own party because they were so aghast at how that party had been taken over by the religious right, and they recommended voters in their area vote for Democrats, local and even up to the governor level. Now, you're going to see that, I believe, this next year, Republicans voting against this crew, because this is giving Republicanism a bad name, apart from anything else. And are you satisfied if you're a Republican voter out there with the defense, don't criticize us because we're in a war, we're defending you from terrorism? That's not democracy. That's not the American way. 866-303-2270. What next, the Sedition Act? 866-303-2270. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. You can write to me, L-A-U-R-A, at airamericaradio.com, and you can call us on 866-303-2270. When we come back, our telephone companies doing the government's business when it comes to all of this illegal spying. We'll hear from Tim Shorrock on that. It's a pretty scary story, and we'll take more of your calls. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Have you experienced a random act of kindness? Someone you haven't seen for years suddenly come back into your life? Do you know a positive story that inspired or motivated you? Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com. For years, Aleve has been devoted to providing good news for people with arthritis pain. Now, Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Here, America Radio News, I'm Jeff Weiser. Violence continues in and around Baghdad. At least 80 bodies have been discovered, with many of them showing signs of torture. They're believed to be victims of the sectarian violence that has gripped the Iraqi capital and increased fears of a civil war. Meantime, CBS News reports the Pentagon is increasing U.S. military presence in Iraq. An armored battalion of 700 soldiers is moving toward Baghdad from its current base in Kuwait. Tuesday's dam burst in Hawaii has claimed at least one life. The Kaloko Reservoir ruptured on Kauai's north shore. An estimated 3 million gallons of water and debris washed across the highway and through nearby neighborhoods. Donna Lewis from radio station KKCR says
they've gotten word that homes and people were swept away.
According to some preliminary reports from the scene, about four structures were swept away in the mudslide. Up to seven people have unofficially been reported missing. We just recently did receive a report from the scene that one body has been recovered. It has not yet been identified.
The Coast Guard sent aircraft to aid county firefighters in rescue operations, but the threat of a second reservoir overflowing has hampered those efforts. The sentencing phase of the trial of 9/11 conspirator Zacharias Moussaoui will continue, but a judge's ruling may have dealt a blow to prosecutors. U.S. District Judge Leonie Brinkema has ruled that she will allow a federal jury to consider imposing the death sentence against Moussaoui, but will bar aviation testimony and other evidence to be introduced. The decision follows Monday's discovery that a government lawyer in the case violated a court rule by sharing information with witnesses. Proceedings in the trial have been delayed until next Monday. The Space Shuttle Discovery will not be launched in May as originally planned. NASA has announced the launch will be postponed because of a problem with a sensor in the spacecraft's external fuel tank. The same sensors in a different tank caused similar delays last year. NASA now hopes to launch Discovery on a mission to the International Space Station sometime in July. More than 80 college students from around the USA are taking off for spring break, but not for the typical partying. As part of Storm Corps, they've gathered in the Gulf to help with rebuilding projects in areas devastated by last year's hurricanes. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. You normally find me weekends, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on these stations, or at least most of them. We do a show called Radio Nation with Laura Flanders, and if you're a new listener, we'd love to have you along. Tune on in one of these weekends, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Anyway, sitting in for Mike, Mike was in Madison, I think, tonight, giving a speech. If you heard him, I'd love to get a grade. We're talking about, well, the third anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Somebody emailed this evening that on CBS News there was a completely different kind of report than what we heard yesterday from the president. Laura, tonight the CBS Evening News reported that the number of troops in Iraq was going to be increased due to increased violence by insurgents. Yesterday, Bush said he was going to reduce the number of troops in Iraq. What a difference a day makes, writes Richard from Fort Worth. Oh, absolutely. Not to mention who's speaking. Bush is on a campaign. Remember that? Yeah. And CBS is maybe reporting, although who the heck knows. Someone's going to have to take the place of the British troops that are being drawn down. Tony Blair, British Prime Minister, declared he was going to cut the British troop presence in Iraq by 10%, saying it had nothing to do with politics and the hugely unpopular nature of the war there, but rather that the British were gearing up to send a new contingent of forces to Afghanistan. On the question of British forces, did you know that there are British military families taking a leaf out of Cindy Sheehan's book? I was in the UK recently. My sister's pregnant, and I went to visit, and I saw outside Parliament, the sort of scene that we saw outside Crawford, families led by Reg Keyes and others who've actually gone so far as to bring a lawsuit against their prime minister, demanding or at least asking for a meeting with the guy, and he refuses. In just the same way George W. Bush refused to meet with Sheehan. So there they are on that day a couple of weeks ago, maybe three. It was 15 or so parents. Then when their letter wasn't accepted by the prime minister, or rather when the prime minister wouldn't agree to meet with them, the local newspaper, one of them, the Independent, published the letter from the families on the front page of the paper so that you had this very strong message getting across nonetheless, no thanks to the Prime Minister. But imagine what difference it would make if our press would publish the communication of Cindy Sheehan to the President on the front page. What do you think? Now, I'm a big critic of Britain, so don't think I'm being an Anglophile. I'm just saying that I thought it was interesting. Also interesting to look at how movements connect. Reg Keyes, a father of a young man killed in Iraq, member of the British Armed Forces, says he was inspired originally by military families speaking out in this country, and that's why they started mobilizing there. There's going to be a big demonstration against the war. They have a huge anti-war coalition, Stop the War Coalition in the UK, and I think on the 18th is their day of action. Massive demonstration. I think in this country we're going to see more localized ones, but people here need to remember, we need to remember that we are just part of a global community that is fired up, furious about what this president, our president, is doing in the name of democracy, fighting terrorism. A lot of the countries that are watching the actions of this president have had problems with terrorism in the past. Certainly the UK has, call it what you like, they had trouble with bombing in the UK by members of the Irish Republican Army and others. The Italians have had the Red Army, the Germans, all the European countries have had the experience of trying to fight terrorism. Again, I'm not saying they did such a great job, but they didn't suddenly clamp down and rip up their constitutions. They didn't suddenly, throw out their Bill of Rights. They used the criminal law they had to, well, they did some terrible things, torture and forced testimony, all of that. And we saw that in the films about people, particularly Irish people, being put in jail for no reason and having to be let go after years behind bars. As I said, they didn't do things all right. But the president acts like he's the only leader on the planet that ever had to deal with terrorism. Now, 9/11 was of a different scale, but the fact that you have movements around the world who know what it feels like to have an attack. The Spanish, remember Madrid. The Germans certainly had bombing by the Bader-Meinhofs and others internally. They know that level of fear, and they have an experience of responding. And are we learning anything from what other countries have done? Or are we just taking the we must know best approach? And when it's George W. saying, we know best, just trust us, that is an assertion based on nothing. A man who never even traveled outside the country before he was a president has no sense of global history, as far as I can see. Oh, well, I'll stop going on and on. A little bit later in this hour, we will be joined by Tim Sharrock, who's got a very, sort of spine-tingling piece in The Nation magazine recently about the role that your phone company may be playing in the Bush illegal wiretap regime. He'll join us in just a bit. But first, let's take some more calls. Marianne's on the line in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Marianne.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, I made some notes. It's not about the telephone, changes in telephone. It's actually more about leadership and the Democratic Party. Okay. One big problem I see is nobody listens to Howard Dean. The party keeps marginalizing one of its best leaders who has the potential to create change.
I wonder sometimes whether they put him there.
Huh?
I wonder sometimes whether they let him be elected to DNC chair of the Democratic National Committee precisely so that he wouldn't have an ideological role.
Well, I know, and I think he spelled out this great platform that everyone says is missing, and it is, about how the Dems can start winning elections again by returning to the grassroots. And I think he spelled out a number of other directives, but he's constantly dismissed, right, like you said, by the politicians that we do have. And if, can I tell you about an example here in Wisconsin?
Sure.
Okay. Well, last summer, I do some writing sometimes. Last summer, Dean told state party heads in a conference call that the race against Jim Sensenbrenner, who voted against Katrina aid, as you know, mm-hmm. was the most crucial in the country. Mm-hmm. Their word, crucial. But now, all I hear about is how it's a foregone conclusion that the 5th District is, quote-unquote, safe, meaning, why bother? Mm-hmm. Why waste our resources? And I don't know, maybe I'm in la-la land, but I just think, why give up so soon?
Well, I think, you know, you're absolutely right. And if you're looking for evidence of the party insiders' distrust of Howard Dean, you mm-hmm. don't need to look any further than an article that was in the paper at the weekend. I think it was the Washington Post mm-hmm. reporting that Harold Ickes was developing his own lists, the former Clinton advisor who's working for Hillary Clinton. He's developing his own voter file because he doesn't mm-hmm. trust Dean and his.
Yeah, but the thing is, and we keep losing at the polls because all the voters care about or all they really see is that, and it's why they don't trust Democrats, is because all they see is Democrats weaseling out when the going gets rough, you know? It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, right, we don't think that. And that's why voters, they don't respect Democrats at this point. Mm-hmm. The ones I've talked to, I talk to a lot of different people, and I'm like, I promise I won't judge you, but why do you like George Bush? And, you know, and it's hard to keep my mouth closed, but, and, you know, it's because we don't trust ourselves.
Right.
Why should they trust us?
Well, it makes me mad because you have a lot of people that say, I don't trust the Democrats because all they do is criticize and they don't put forward a positive plan.
That's
I think there's a role for criticism, and frankly, there are plenty of positive plans out there. I think they should be more clearly put. I think they should be more loudly put. I think that Russ Feingold is someone who has won election time after time on a strong record. Yeah.
Isn't he excellent? Can I give you two website addresses?
Sure.
Okay, one is of the candidate trying to run against Sensenbrenner. He ran in 2004, and for dark horse candidate, he got really respectable numbers. His name is Brian Kennedy. His website is www.bk2006.org. One more thing. I'm sorry. Okay, and then I wrote an article that gives some background on this shameless self-promotion. But,
go for it.
Okay, but it also includes some comments by Randy Rhodes. Okay, it's on my blog.
Okay, shameless promotion, self-promotion of you and her.
Okay, it's a twofer. race2006.blogspot.com.
race2006.blogspot.com. All right, thanks, Marianne. Appreciate
okay,
the
good.
Call.
Good show, bye.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for maintaining the Wisconsin spine out there. All right, we will be joined in a little bit by Tim Shark, a longtime contributor to The Nation magazine. He's writing a book for Simon & Schuster about corporate influence on U.S. foreign policy. And boy, has he got some information about how U.S. telecom companies are participating with the Bush illegal wiretap regime. AT&T, MCI, you name it, and there's probably a whole lot of others too. All right, we'll be back with Tim and with more of your calls. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. I'm sitting in for Mike. I'm Laura Flanders.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
If you're looking for the ideal job, Mystery Shop Link has immediate openings for mystery shoppers in your area. Mystery shoppers get paid to shop, dine and drink at restaurants, and even go to the movies. Companies pay you to be their eyes and ears. You tell them how you're treated and how their prices compare. As a mystery shopper, you set your own hours and pick up your own assignments. Bring home hundreds of extra dollars. To qualify, you must be over 18, have a checking account, credit or debit card, and internet access. All you need to do is shop. For a small fee, Mystery ShopLink will have you mystery shopping in a few days. Call now and you'll get a $1,000 online catalog gift certificate. Order what you want. As a mystery shopper, you get to keep the goods free. You'll get the details when you call. This is a very limited offer, so call right now. Call 1-888-250-5563 to find out how you can get paid to shop. That's 1-888-250-5563. Paid shopping assignments are now available in your area. Call 1-888-250-5563.
Offer not available in Nevada.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. With us is Tim Sharrock. He's a longtime contributor to The Nation magazine, and he had a piece on the cover of the magazine March 2nd titled Watch What You Say. It was about the role that telecom companies are playing in the warrantless illegal wiretap program that Russ Feingold wanted to censor the president about. I guess he still wants to censor the president about. Tim's joining us on the phone. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
In broad strokes, tell us what sort of a situation we're in. You say that we know that three corporations are involved in cooperating with the government to conduct this surveillance, AT&T, Sprint, and MCI. How much do we know? How much do you know?
Well, what we know is, first of all, what was in the New York Times originally back in December, which was the under this executive order signed by Bush, the National Security Agency has been directing all its technology, all its data mining towards American citizens in living in the U.S. for the first time in about 30 years since the 1970s. That's one thing we know. And the second thing is that as a result of this executive order, certain telecom companies have given access to the NSA to their databases, their computerized databases of telephone calls, emails, faxes, which the NSA has then been, studying, monitoring with its various technology, like mining for data, mining for keywords, key numbers, and then using that information to match up to numbers it might have gotten from overseas or whatever, and then following that up and then actually listening to calls. So the original story in the Times said at least 50 people up. About 500 people a day for quite a few years now, going on almost 4 years. So there's been thousands and thousands of calls have been listened to. And so none of the telecom companies will confirm, nor will they deny it flatly, but nobody will really talk about it. But that's, in a nutshell, what we know.
Now, what do AT&T, Sprint, MCI, all of them, what can they offer the National Security Agency that the CIA, the NSA can't do for themselves? I mean, haven't they had their own surveillance system in place, certainly internationally, for years?
Yeah, they have. And, they've been doing this kind of monitoring for many years on American citizens. They used to just, with the agreement of a couple of corporations like Western Union back in the 60s, they used to, just open with their permission, they'd read their people's telegrams, listen to phone calls. But now the telecom industry has exploded in the last, 20 years, and there's many more players than there used to be, and technology is much more developed. And so instead of, telephone calls being beamed by satellite, most of it travels on fiber optic cables underneath the ocean, underneath the ground, and that's much harder to listen to with that kind of older technology that the NSA developed during the course of the Cold War. And so, at one point during the 1960s, the NSA actually cut into cables that were operated by the Soviet Union with their military.
Oops.
Underneath the ocean, and cut into the cables and listened to it that way. It was an extremely expensive project, in the hundreds of millions of dollars. What they do with the telecom companies now is they kind of have a back door into these fiber optic networks that flow all over the world. And so that by getting into the networks and with the permission of the companies, they can monitor this traffic, quite easily from almost any point in the company's network based in the U.S.
So
essentially it's making it a lot cheaper for the NSA to do this.
So when you sign up, when one signs up with one of these companies, do we have any rights at all?
Well, that's the question. I think in this current administration, in this current political climate, we don't really. I mean, of course, Bush says, you're talking Al-Qaeda, we want to know about it.
Right, they say it's just a program for wiretapping terrorists.
Right, only terrorists. And of course, that's what they say. But what's to stop them from, taking this information and all the technology it has at its disposal to listen to phone calls or monitor people like Cindy Sheehan or, you know, anti-war protesters, any number of people that they may not like. I mean, just because they say they're not doing it doesn't mean they're not doing it, which we've learned, you know, many times over the past few years about the war in Iraq. So I think it's really dangerous. And the thing is that they don't, this is what's very different about what they're doing now from the past, is that they don't even have to get a warrant now. They're not using warrants. It's warrantless surveillance.
Mm.
And so, you know, the law that was passed in the 70s, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, was specifically written by Congress to prevent this from happening.
Mm. And the reason they're not going for warrants is because it's not warrants they want. They want a check to be able to open a hearing device on a whole enormous net of communications. We'll come back, we'll continue the conversation. Tim Sharrock's our guest. Watching What You Say appeared in the March, not 2nd, but 20th issue of The Nation magazine. We'll be right back. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands to show you everyone.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's Massaging Gel Insoles. More cushioning, totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who is working on future safety innovations like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
I'm so glad you got tickets to this concert.
Yeah, definitely. This guy's put on a killer show.
Great, let's go.
Wait, it's just the open band. Let's get a little stone first. It's crazy strong. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, The Anti-Drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
A good news story from EliteGoodNews.com.
I'm passionate about two things, motorcycles and my grandchildren. But for the past 3 years, I've suffered from arthritis. The pain caused me to lose strength in my arms, and I couldn't pick up my grandchildren. My doctor suggested I try Aleve, and I definitely noticed a difference. With the pain gone, I've got the energy to pick up my grandchildren and have fun. It's fantastic.
Aleve invites you to share your good news at EliteGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
All right, so that music is out of the Laura Flanders Show file, right? Not out of the Mike Malloy Show file. So I just wondered if we had a similar kind of a taste. Oh, me too. Me too. Although, you should, if you tune in weekends, you hear the whole gamut. I promise. I've forced beloved Sadie Sullivan, who works the board and does our music, to integrate country and all sorts of stuff into our repertoire. So it's quite an interesting mix. Listen, people, I just got the best list of war anniversary-related events. You know what I mean? Events to commemorate and decry the third anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. So hang on, and I'll be sure to give you a bunch of websites and information right after the next break, okay? Right now, we've got with us on the line Tim Sharrock. I should say I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to radio, you're listening to Air America Radio. I'm sitting in for Mike Malloy. Getting tired and late here. Tim Sharrock had a piece, Watching What You Say, in the March 20th issue of The Nation magazine. And among other things, he goes into great depth into the way that certain corporations, namely telecommunication corporations, are cooperating, you try and say that, with the government in this warrantless wiretap program. He also talks about the way that government control over business and relationship with big businesses like these has resulted in the relationships that are now being the closeness that can now be exploited. He writes, the government has gone to great lengths to ensure law enforcement access to foreign-owned telecom companies. Take the example of Global Crossing, which owns several undersea cable systems and claims to serve more than 700 carriers, mobile operators, and ISPs, the people that provide you your internet service. 3 years ago, as Global Crossing was emerging from one of the largest bankruptcies in U.S. history, it was purchased by a company which is partly owned by the government of Singapore. I want to ask Tim to take up the story from there, but as part of the U.S. approval process, it looks like the company got into a relationship with the FBI and the Defense Department. Tim, give us the details, and how did this involve Richard Perle?
Well, at the time, Richard Perle was the chairman of the Defense Policy Board, which advises Donald Rumsfeld and the Pentagon on various issues, and was taking a lead role in the strategy for invading Iraq.
He was one of the signatories on the PNAC, Project for a New American Century, letter to President Clinton.
Right, the sort of spiritual leader, you might say, of the neocons in Washington. At any rate, you know, what Seymour Hersh uncovered in his reporting in 2003 was some conflicts of interest between the defense interests that Perle worked with and the fact that he was, you know, representing these interests at the same time he was giving advice to the Pentagon on matters of war. And Global Crossing was one of his clients. And when it was at first the Chinese company tried to buy Global Crossing, and this came under criticism, and the Chinese backed out, and then the Singapore company took the lead in buying the company. And in the process, Perle basically helped the company, you know, cut an agreement that would be okay with the U.S. government. And as part of this, they had a written agreement as part of the acquisition, which had to be filed with the Federal Communications Commission. And this was an agreement with the Department of Defense, the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and a couple other agencies, in which Global Crossing promised to make all its domestic communications had to pass through a facility physically located in the U.S. from which electronic surveillance could be conducted pursuant to lawful U.S. process. And, of course, the key words here are lawful U.S. process. Global Crossing wouldn't talk at all, and neither did the other companies for that matter. But the issue here is, what is legal? Many companies, and after my article came out in The Nation, somebody, you know, from a leading telecom company in the West Coast emailed me, and he said, you know, these kind of agreements are fairly common in the industry, this one that I talked about with Global Crossing. And it's true, companies are by law, and there's several laws that have been passed in recent years that require telecom companies to make their systems accessible for legal surveillance. So, you know, if the FBI wants to put a tap on a telephone of a drug dealer or something, that can be done. Lawful kind of bugging. The question is, you know, is this lawful? How did the companies, in what form was the request made from the government? Did they get a letter from the Attorney General saying they're exempt from the law or that this is lawful and therefore they will not be prosecuted? Was this a verbal request? Did they, you know, did President Bush call him into the White House for a sit down? Who knows? But that is the question is, you know, how legal is this? And what I tried to get at in the article, and by talking to, you know, people who were legal experts and telecom experts, was what is the, are the companies complicit? If this program is found to be illegal at some point, are the companies complicit? And, you know, there's a lot of disagreement about that.
Well, it does seem to be, on the face, illegal. We have a law that states one thing, and the president is doing another thing without having changed that law.
Yeah, that's right.
Where's the wiggle room? I don't see it.
Well, I totally agree with that, and I don't see it either. I mean, FISA, the law passed in the 70s is very clear. You have to have a warrant.
Yeah, don't like it, change the law.
You know, and you go to the special court, this FISA court that was set up. It's a secret court. They hardly ever turn requests down, and there's also a lot of flexibility built into it. So if they need to get the permission like 4 or 5 days after they actually put the tap on somebody, they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, 10 years ago, I remember railing against the FISA court. Now it looks like if only they would return to the FISA court, all our rights would be restored. They wouldn't.
Yeah,
it was pretty shady back then. One of the powerful, and the part that's really sort of scary is a bad word, I guess. It sort of doesn't really capture it. But in your article, you talk about the relationship between the White House and these companies. And these are some of the companies whose future constantly comes up, or at least regularly comes up for review by what are left of our anti-monopoly commissions, those like the FCC and the fair trading rules that consider whether just how much power one company can have. What you describe in this article is the close relationship, including quarterly conference calls with these guys, which is to say the CEOs of AT&T and MCI and Sprint and the White House, President Bush or Vice President Dick Cheney. You can see this kind of, you know, you pat my back, I'll pat yours thing going on, and the people, the public, and Congress don't have any say at all. Now, aren't Congress, shouldn't people on Capitol Hill be fired up about this?
Well, you would think so, but so far it's been, the silence is deafening. There's been one Democrat on the House side, Representative Conyers from Michigan, who's, of course, the top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, has sent out letters to, you know, as many companies as they could possibly think of, including the three we've been talking about, plus many others, to inquire about, you know, are they involved, asking them a lot of questions about their involvement. And none of them had, you know, a few of them, one or two actually said they had not taken part in the program, but most of them either not responded to his letter or, like AT&T, they've written something like, we will not comment on press reports, but we abide by U.S. law, things like that. Kennedy's looked into it. Senator Kennedy's tried to get answers from the companies, as well as Senator Feingold,
who, of course,
is trying to get the censure thing through without much support at all.
I mean, this is what people forget about when they say, well, why is he jumping to censure? He's not jumping to censure. He's been trying to investigate this stuff in this way and others. I mean, this story and other aspects of it for, well, probably over a year now, probably since the passage of the Patriot Act. One bit of news that came out today, Tim, I just wanted to ask you about the U.S. Justice Department and its verdict for Google Inc. You know, there's this whole question about whether Google is going to turn over certain customer records. The Justice Department has apparently cut its demand for what they want from Google. Google's saying this is a step in the right direction, but what does it mean for our privacy? What will now be being handed over? And does it make any difference, really, if they have this huge pipeline to all this information through other ways?
I guess they're going to find out, like, how people search for porn on Google.
Well, that's what they say they want the information for, but reading your article and living right now in these times, I'm a little bit skeptical.
Yeah, and it also makes you wonder, like, you know, how has Google responded to this kind of request? They haven't said anything about this particular program. And any, like I say in the article, Google, Yahoo, AOL, any of these companies, could be cooperating with the NSA because, you know, of course, AT&T and Sprint and MCI own, you know, vast portions of our telecom network, but these companies run, you know, network service internet service, mm-hmm. or internet service provider. Mm. Through them, our email goes. Mm. I mean, it goes through all of these networks. It goes on the fiber optic cables, and it goes, you know, on different telecom networks. Mm. So any number of them could be working with them. And I think also an important part of my article is also talking about companies that we usually don't hear much about, these so-called beltway bandits that are all, you know, set up shop in Washington, D.C., companies that supply technology, this sort of like data mining software, which the NSA uses to go through the information. I mean, I think they're as much culpable as anybody else. They're very, very close to the NSA. Many of these companies are staffed by, you know, former NSA deputy directors, in some cases directors, director of acquisitions. And it's almost like they're little private armies, private intelligence services that, you know, are contractors of intelligence, but they're operating at a very high level of our national security infrastructure.
We're running out of time, Tim, but I want to answer the question that's probably in some people's minds. I want you to answer it. We found out after 9/11 that there had been communication on the internet that maybe if we had been aware of it might conceivably have had an effect on what happened that day. For the people that are out there saying, well, wouldn't you want the government to have access to this kind of eavesdropping mechanism if it could give us information that the traditional wiretap telephone system couldn't? What's your answer, and is there a way that this whole system should be reformed?
Well, I think there's legal ways to do surveillance, and I don't see any argument that says – and this should be done illegally just because we're involved in a war on terror. I mean, the thing is, if they want to listen to Al-Qaeda making a telephone call and they track numbers from some computer they find in Pakistan or you know, someplace in the Middle East, they have the means of doing it. They could have used this FISA court to do that. But I think that the thing is that there's nobody willing to really shed light on this. I mean, they gave so little information to the people at least on the Democratic side, the intelligence committees, that they complained right after they got their briefings. Mm-hmm. We don't know enough about this. This raises, you know, grave questions of oversight. And when you throw private companies into the mix, then it becomes even more dangerous, because what is the oversight? Who has the oversight over these private companies? What if they are breaking the law? Are they culpable? Are we going to bring them to the court of law, too?
And who's going to do it? All right, Tim, thank you so much. I know that you're working on a book about this subject, about the role of corporations in foreign policy. We'll look out for it. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Tim Shorrock's piece, Watch What You Say, appeared in the March 20th issue of The Nation magazine. You can find it on the web. Thanks for staying with us. When we come back, I'll give you, before I go, a list of events that are happening this week, the anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Stay tuned. You're listening to Air America Radio.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
Oh, it's been fun sitting in for Mike Malloy. I'm Laura Flanders. It's been a pleasure being with you here this evening. If you want to catch my program, you can. Weekend, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. It's called Radio Nation with Laura Flanders. We have a very friendly blogosphere, and we have a good time every week. I've been traveling around the country, but I'll be doing the show from New York this weekend. And we've got some good guests in store. I know Eliza Gilkerson, the singer-songwriter, will be with us, and Robert Fitch on corruption and the labor movement in New York. I said I would give you some information about anti-war, pro-peace, pro-justice rallies that are taking place around the country this week, the third anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion. There's a central kind of clearinghouse for a lot of information about local actions taking place this week, and that's the website of the organization United for Peace and Justice. You can go to www.unitedforpeace.org, and there's a link. The 18th at 1, there'll be a march to Lieberman's office to oppose the war on March 19th, I believe that's Sunday, at 2. organized by Connecticut Opposes the War, and you can get information about that at afterdowningstreet.org. Seems like a good one to go to. And there are, as I said, demonstrations all across the country. There's a march to the Pentagon, of course, by IraqPledge.org on the 20th with Vietnam veterans and others honoring the dead and organizing and fighting like hell for the living. So you can get more information about all of these at UnitedForPeace.org. And let's take one last call. Lobo's been waiting on the line in Chicago. Hi, Lobo. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Hello, Laura. Is that you?
It's me.
Yeah, Mike. I love Mike, but you sound a lot better, I tell you that.
I won't tell him you said that.
No. But I tell you, now I just wanted to let you know, give you an invitation. I just sent off an invitation to Randy Rose. I missed her. I left Camp Casey and Crawford the day before she got there.
Oh, which was the day before I got there.
Oh, for crying out loud. Yeah, well, anyway, we'll be back there about the 9th through the 16th of April for Easter week.
Oh, very good. Give my regards to all the good people at the Peace House there.
Well, you're invited.
Oh, I would love to be down there.
Well, I hope to see Kelly and Stan and all these other people. I'm bad with all these names I was hearing earlier.
Yeah.
From the march, I know.
It's powerful business that they're out there marching, don't you think?
Absolutely. I just couldn't get down there. Saw Bill Mitchell here in Chicago in late January, early February, and no, he's going down there. He's one of the co-founders of Gold Star Families for Peace with Cindy, and she was in town here. She caught the worst weather we had all winter.
Well, listen, Lobo, thank you for being out there, and thank you for going down to Crawford. You take me with you in spirit, at least. I want to end with some reminder of what Sandra Day O'Connor, No Radical, said this past week. I'm reading from a report of a speech that she gave at Georgetown University that was Georgetown University the end of last week, I believe. It was reported by National Public Radio and the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin, but boy, I haven't seen enough of this. Don't forget, this is a woman nominated by Ronald Reagan, and she is concerned about a climate of violence against judges and the rights attack on the judiciary. She said, "We must be ever vigilant against those who would strong-arm the judiciary. It takes a lot of degeneration before a country falls into dictatorship, but we should avoid these ends by avoiding these beginnings. Statutes and constitutions do not protect judicial independence," said Sandra Day O'Connor. "People do. And that's you. And that's me. And that's Mike. And Mike will be back here tomorrow night. We'll look forward to it. And I'll be back on these airwaves this weekend. Give us a listen at Radio Nation with Laura Flanders, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. You can find us on the web at radionation.org. That's radionation.org. And you can get more information about Mike Malloy and The Mike Malloy Show here on Air America Radio at our website, airamericaradio.com. Have a great night. Stay strong. Stay safe. We'll be back on Saturday. Mike will be here tomorrow.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.